When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Farmers Guardian is proud to work alongside the Rock and Roll Farming Podcast. For all the latest news and features from across the ag industry, head to fginsight.com. You'll also find a wide variety of advice pieces to help you and your farming business flourish.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Rock and Roll Farming is proud to be part of the Farm and Rural Ag Network. For more great agriculture-related podcasts and vlogs, please visit farmruralag.com.
Farm Africa.
Oye.
Uganda.
Oye.
Kanungu.
Oye.
Youth.
Oye.
Women.
Oye.
Coffee.
Oye.
UK.
Oye.
What you've just heard is the reaction of farmers in Kanunga, Uganda, to hearing that Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal has launched. Between 8th of February and the 8th of May, donations in support of my London Marathon Challenge will go to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal. If you can donate before 8th of May 2019, all public donations to Farm Africa's Coffee is Life appeal will be doubled by the UK government. What a country. Your donation will support Farm Africa projects across Eastern Africa, and the matched funding you unlock from the UK government will directly fund a Farm Africa project that will give women in Kanungu in Western Uganda the opportunity to make a decent living from coffee farming. I'm trying to raise £5,000 to support the appeal, and if you could spare anything at all, we would greatly appreciate it. Just visit justgiving.com/fundraising/William-Evans12, and I will put that link in the show notes. Thank you. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 112. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I'm heading down to London to talk to the founder and CEO of ethical online grocery company Farm Drop, Ben Pugh. Ben, how are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Will. Thanks for having us on the podcast.
My pleasure. So before we talk about Farm Drop itself, let's get to know the man behind it all first. You're a born and bred Londoner, right?
I am indeed, yes. Born 41 years ago, approximately, in a hospital that was knocked down pretty soon after I was born there. I've been here ever since.
So where did your appreciation for the outdoors and the countryside come from?
So my mum grew up in a little village called Chettle, which is sort of Wiltshire-Dorset borders. Mm-hmm. And even though we grew up in South West London, sort of Battersea way, we'd be loaded in the back of a Ford Capri every Friday night and driven down the M3. So that was really the link. They were really lovely muddy weekends, and there was a little wee dairy right next door to my grandma's house. Yeah. So it was a lot of weekends walking forests and stuff. So I love London, I've always sort of thought of myself as somebody who's destined for the countryside. I'll let you know how that goes.
And you used to help out a little bit, that farmer milking his cows.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I was milking, I reckon, from the age of about 4 or 5.
Wow.
I reckon, being sat on a little stool. But it was fleeting. It only went on for a few years because, you know, sadly it was one of an example of a population of smaller dairies.
Yeah.
Dairy farmers that's sadly far too large that, you know, they're not there anymore.
No, that's right.
Because they couldn't achieve that kind of minimum efficient scale in the new world order of supermarkets. So it was, and you know, So whilst, and I didn't join the dots at the time, subsequently I think I started to think about the food system as a system. Mm. But you know, I do remember my mum pushing me around the first Sainsbury's that opened. And that was great news because she had hours and hours of more spare time each week, because suddenly there was this place where she'd go and do all of her shopping. And that was, so I remember that bit of being this whole big convenience upgrade, and isn't that great? And of course, it was only later that I kind of gained an understanding around how that great boon of convenience was great for a customer, but it was actually doing ultimately pretty bad things for anybody who wasn't a mega big farmer.
Yeah, definitely. So you obviously didn't choose a career in agriculture. For a while you worked in the boating industry. Tell us about that. That must have been really
cool. Yeah, that's right. It was. Yeah, definitely. And, I know that you're often based out in Wales. My mum and dad met in a little town called Aberystwyth in North West Wales. So we were sort of deposited up there for summer holidays with extended family. So I've always loved the sea and fishing as well. So I when I left university, I went off and sailed boats around for a number of years. And it was mainly sort of delivery gigs. So, you know, somebody wanted a boat moving from, I don't know, New Zealand to Spain, and typically the owners of sort of big expensive yachts don't actually want to sail them across the oceans. So they pay a young lad or woman like me, you know, the yacht master, to do it for them, and no complaints. It was great fun. But also it was, you know, you build quite a strong relationship with the sea and the general kind of marine environment.
Yeah,
if it's basically your home because you're living on it. Mm. And that whole thing about, you know, if you're catching fish on the way across the Indian Ocean and that is your, that's your diet, that's what's sustaining you, it certainly was part of the, it informed part of the think about, wow, isn't that cool? Like this very low impact, very direct, you know, I'm catching the fish, they're coming out of the sea, I'm eating them within 24 hours. Mm. And I think perhaps subconsciously at times, but I was trying to create a food system in farm drop which was much, much closer to that. And so the city stuff that followed that, and I mean, ultimately, I did a good few years of sailing, and my brain was starting just to get a bit sunburned and soggy. I thought I'd repay my parents' investment in my education and my economics degree. So like lots of people who go into the city, I thought, okay, I want to start up my own kind of eco-entrepreneurial thing, or what it actually would be. And so it was, I was trying to build a bit of capital that I could use to go and do something under my own steam. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was very common. You'd ask people who, you know, what their story was, and lots of people were, you know, in there in order to sort of make some money and then go out and do something else. But it's a much smaller percent of people who do end up leaving by their own volition, because people just kind of get stuck. It's one of those things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I was. It took me longer than I thought to get out, but it was never a question of whether I was going to get out, because I've always been really excited about going and, you know, starting something up, which I'm excited to say that I'm now doing.
Well, definitely. So I read in another interview that you gathered a lot of insight into the supermarket's ways of working and saw how ultimately they were propping up a broken food system. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's a good, we do still use this terminology, and our mission remains as the same one that it's been throughout, which is to fix the food chain. So it is a fair question, what's broken about in the first place? I guess from my point of view, as a customer, and I, you know, got much more interested, I guess, in my sort of late 20s, early 30s, into the nutritional side of this whole food system. and the relationship between, you know, the provenance of food and the nutritional value.
Yeah.
And then there I was living in a fairly central area of London, finding it extremely difficult for me to conveniently access local seasonal fresh food. Mm-hmm. And I just found that back in the year of our Lord 2012, that it was, you know, mobile phones and smartphones, they were already around at that point. So it just seemed a bit ridiculous to me that there wasn't already a super easy way for me to jump on an app and hit a few buttons and for that to connect me with local bakers and local organic vegetable growers and local beer makers and local fishermen. My journeys around the food retail industry, as a somebody kind of looking at the industry behind the desk, one of the things that came across and was quite startling was how, you know, the last 4 or 5 decades has just sort of systematically stretched and expanded and added thousands of links to chains in food systems. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing just seemed incredibly complicated to me. And at one end, there was me, the consumer, who was thinking, this is ridiculous. I just want some nice local veg and I don't want to have to incur a load of inconvenience to get it. And then it got more interesting, actually, going out and meeting some of the producers whose food I really wanted to access. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that was a kind of probably more like a kind of mid-scale than a mega-scale. And actually, I am scale agnostic. The last 6-7 years of farm brothers taught me that there are, you know, there are good farmers and not so good farmers, and you can have plenty of examples of those in either large or small categories. So we're not saying, you know, small is always the best thing. Mm-hmm. I think in my experience, it more often than not is. But when you did go out to actually start seeing what the look of the land was for, a small dairy farmer or organic grower, that was when it became apparent that their pain point was far graver. You know, they essentially been put in a position where they had to choose between going it alone and fighting the good fight to try and generate a local group of customers,
yeah,
in which case they had to do a hell of a lot more than just produce the food.
Yes.
They had to be a fully integrated,
yeah,
multi-competence business, complete with finance and marketing and logistics and delivery and storage and planning and all of it. And that, you know, it's so difficult. It really is so difficult to do all of those things at once, unless you're operating at really quite significant scale. And so the other way, of course, is just to say, well, I just want to make food because that's what I'm passionate, mm-hmm, about and what I'm really good at. So I will then sell it either through to a wholesaler or, you know, a big supermarket. In which case, you get a really horrifically low share of the retail price. So it just felt like there was a group of producers who were making the food that I wanted to consume and wanted to feed my family. And they were generally caught between a rock and a hard place, and that's how it all began, I guess.
Okay, all right. So tell us about the basics of Farm Drop. Then, what do you do? What are your core principles, and why are you so different from other supermarkets?
Sure. So we're really trying to use mobile technology and lithium battery powered delivery vehicles, which are zero emission, to relocalize food systems and make them much lower impact in terms of their environmental impact. And the way that we do that is to at the moment we've got roughly 400 independent producers that we're very proudly distributing food on behalf of. If I, as a customer at the other end of the system, if I go onto the app or the desktop, I can scroll about 4,000 different products from about 400 different producers. And it's the core categories are, as you'd imagine, you know, veg, fruit, eggs, dairy, bakery, meat, fish. But we also have broadened out to do things like, you know, eco-friendly household goods like dishwasher tablets and so forth. Mm-hmm. And for the consumer, what we're trying to create is just a very easy one-stop shop for people who want amazing, fresh, local food, and also to shop in the lowest environmental footprint way. And because we're using mobile technology in quite a revolutionary way, and I think, you know, actual producers in fields and fishermen on boats who are seeing real-time customer order flow, we're radically reducing the variable costs involved in moving food between producer and customer, and that is a really big deal, because if you can do that, then you can share the benefits of spending less money moving food around between producers. You get a way higher share of retail price than we think they can get anywhere else, and consumers who get the best food and they're not paying fantastically high prices for it. And that's really the power of mobile technology and the farm to food system. It's everybody getting a better deal, and it's quite by design a kind of refusal of this idea of the zero sum game, i.e. it's business 101 that somebody has to get leapt over at some point because that's how it works. And actually, you know, that's our mission. That's our fix in the food chain. Philosophy is that, you know, we'll create a food system here where no one's getting raked over.
Yeah.
And that's very important. And I think it's been one of the things that's really helped us to, you know, carve out a bit of a foothold in the industry.
Definitely. And am I right in thinking that Farm Drop farmers earned on average twice as much than conventional farmers in 2018?
Yes, so and conventional in your use case there just means somebody who's selling into the supermarket. Yeah. Okay, yeah, cool. Obviously, there's the old organic versus conventional.
Yes, which is
we won't go there for a minute. And later, if you want, of course. But yeah, that is right. So, you know, on my travels around, you know, the food world and looking at various research and including some of the stats that you see published by guys like the National Farmers Union, roughly about 11% of all the money that's spent on food in the UK actually makes its way back to UK producers. Mm. You know, I'm just talking about like the domestically produced stuff, but that includes, you know, all of the kind of things like grains that are going to go into bread, and so it's probably a bit more natural to think of a lower share of retail price for that very end of the supply chain producer. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, if I go into a supermarket and find, you know, a butternut squash, then I reckon that the farmer who made that would be lucky if they're getting a third of the retail price. Mm-hmm. And with Farm Drop, they'd be getting much more like two-thirds of the retail price. And that, again, it comes back to this idea of me being the lowest variable cost operator. So I can afford to give the farmers the best share of retail price, i.e. 2x, and yet the business still makes money. And, you know, from a consumer's point of view, the way that I think about this as a very happy Farm Drop customer is that, well, if I'm spending a pound on a bag of carrots, of course I want the lion's share of that pound to go to the producer, because that's going to mean the quality of the carrots is better. I want the investment to be in the production of the food, not in lots of different links between the producer and me, the consumer. So actually, you know, increasingly, I think of this thing not just as a let's be more supportive to farmers, which it absolutely is, but let's create a better value proposition for consumers. Let's let them spend their money on the actual food rather than all the stuff that happens between the producer and the consumer, which increasingly just not very relevant. It's not relevant to our customer group. Mm. They walking supermarket aisles is something I'm sure that's going to be going on for decades in the UK, but I'm not sure if it's going to be going on for forever. No. You know, it doesn't solve a problem for me to be walking around a big supermarket searching for stuff. I'd much rather just do it quietly on the way home on an app, and then as if by magic, all the food arrives the next day and it's lovingly unpacked on my kitchen table. That's just better, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I'll go and kick a ball around with my 4-year-olds rather than go to the supermarket. Really. So I think that's a big structural shift, and it's about convenience, and home delivery is about convenience, and we're really trying to, you know, float along on those tailwinds, i.e. people want more convenience, and people have woken up to this whole thing about provenance.
Yes.
Very good reason that, you know, there's something, not something, there's a lot that's not okay about the mainstream food system, and the internet means many things to many people, but one of the things is that you can find stuff out that you just couldn't find out before.
Exactly, yeah. So, and one of the things that you also big on there is compostable and planet-friendly packaging instead of plastic. I mean, we see all these horrific images of plastic in the oceans and things lately. That's something that's important to you at Farm Drop.
Totally, yeah. So we set ourselves a challenge at the beginning of this year. I think having had a real bee in our bonnet about the amount of plastic in the whole food system, mm-hmm. and also in our own system.
Yeah.
Part of the thing about being an online marketplace and interfacing with hundreds of different independent producers is trying to get everybody to come with you and use your cornstarch packaging as opposed to the plastic. That was just, you know, as a young company, you know, trying to get it right for customers every time. That was just something that actually we hadn't got to a point where we could really spend the time on. And finally, at the beginning of this year, we just said enough. We've got to actually take a line here and set ourselves a 6-week challenge of removing as much of the plastic from the system as we possibly could. Mm-hmm. And over the coming months, we'll see the results of that coming through in customer orders. And I'm really excited about it. We haven't got rid of everything. I think eventually we will get rid of everything, but it's things like wood pulp bags that look and feel just like plastic. We're going to be using those in conjunction with a lot of bakery products. We're going to be using cornstarch essentially to do all of the veg. We've managed to reconfigure quite a lot of our hub operations in order to just very simply take a whole layer of packaging out in the first place. So when my delivery arrived at the weekend, you know, there's a lovely delivery guy called Tony who was just literally grabbing loose potatoes and sticking them on my kitchen counter, and loose carrots and sticking them on my kitchen counter. And that's great. That's what I want, you know. Me increasingly will be using paper in conjunction with what rather than plastic.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having had a really good go at it over the last couple of months, we will quite immediately land the first big upgrade, but it's going to become a little bit like our emissions targets and our carbon targets. Those are the things that you actually just have to go back and keep getting better at year in, year out. I think you'd be very unwise to take the view about, right, we should, like that project
done. Yeah.
We forget about that now. Because there's always an upgrade in terms of reduced environmental impact that you can land out there.
Mm.
So if we can make unit economics right, then we're just going to keep hunting them down.
Absolutely. And another huge issue for supermarkets and the country in general is food waste, thankfully being talked a lot about right now. Got Hugh Fernley Whittingsall's TV programme, things like that. What do you do at Farm Drop to combat that?
Yeah, I mean a lot. I remember watching that Hugh Fernley Whittingsall programme a few years ago now, where I think it was a turnip producer who was selling into Morrison's, And he got the facts the day before saying, we've changed our minds.
And so I remember that,
Put them all in the bin for all we care. Yeah. It's all written in the terms and conditions, so there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, going back to your question, like, is the system broken? Well, yes. If stuff like that's happening. So what our philosophy is that if you can create much directer connectivity between farmer and consumer, such that only the food that's actually been purchased by a customer leaves the farm, mm-hmm. then you can radically reduce the amount of waste in the system. And that is pretty much how we do it. We've recently introduced some extremely lean seams of inventory, which just help us manage overs and unders. You know, that's as a tech-enabled logistics company, our job is to, you know, support producers to get it right every time, but also to have a solution for when they don't.
Yeah.
So we hold a tiny, tiny amount of inventory. It's a fraction of anybody else. And what we're trying to achieve is a system which is really super reliable in terms of customers always getting what they want, but one that's as close as possible to zero waste. And we think that we are doing that.
Yeah.
And again, it's just that is, I think, about, you know, putting the informational power back in the hands of the producers, showing them what they're selling, giving them really granular forecasts. We also have a very strong opinion that, you know, if you're gonna give an order to a farmer, then you would never ever renege on that.
Yeah.
You know. So our payment terms for farmers are, you know, the best in the industry. I.e., farmers can get paid every 2 weeks if they want to, or more generally, the preference is for monthly. So if you say that roughly, that's, you know, 20 to 30 days, within 20 to 30 days of delivery. Yeah. And I'm giving you an average there. Some are, you know, slightly different, but that compares to, you know, supermarket average of more like 90 days,
yeah,
or even longer. And that's really bad news. That's all part of a socially suboptimal industry structure, mm-hmm. where you've got a small number of hugely powerful players who can just say, if you don't like 120 days, then you can stuff off.
Yeah.
It's not helping us in terms of our environment, nutritionally, in terms of supporting local producers. So yeah, that whole thing about using the technology to give farmers a better deal in terms of payment terms is a really big thing, alongside the reduced waste.
Fantastic. So in those early days, when you first came up with the idea and determined to fix this broken food system, how did you initially go about contacting farmers and convincing them to get involved?
It was very ad hoc, and I think it would just be completely disingenuous to say, oh, well, I already knew no farmers, because, yeah, you know, I went to my grandma's house, all of that stuff had, you know, that was long since gone, and so it really was a case of starting from scratch. And farmers markets were a good place to go and actually start, mm-hmm. chatting to a few farmers.
Yeah.
But really, it was practically out of the phone book and phoning farmers up and saying, hey, look, can we come and have a chat? And as won't surprise anybody, I guess it didn't me at the time, but you know, generally people were very suspicious and they didn't really want to know,
because
there's another, you know, here's another guy who's just driven down from London with a bright idea about you know, doing something good for farmers. Well, we've heard that one before. You know, the chap turned up from Tesco's about 20 years ago.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
and you know, so the cynicism that you were generally being met with was completely fair, and you know, it's just become, I think I can say, even that we're still a very young company, I can think of think I can say quite proudly that if you now go back to the producers that we've worked with for the duration, that, you know, they've, it's real. Like we've set out to do something that's going to make a really positive difference to them, and it has done. And, you know, that it's a very different format, the one that we are using now, 100% home delivery, than the original format. The original format was trying to get some kind of click and collect system going. That didn't work. It was just, unfortunately, turned out to be a bad idea in terms of simply not offering anything like the amount of convenience that either side of the marketplace needed.
Yeah.
The makers nor the eaters of the food. So, you know, that, and that, I guess, is also sort of part of the, now part of the DNA of Farm Drop is this idea, well, our starting point, this whole journey was actually quite wide of the mark, and we feel like we're much closer to the mark now in terms of it's working way, way better for both sides of the marketplace. But it's not finished and it's not perfect and probably never going to be perfect.
No.
But every day we turn up, it's with that attitude of saying, I can't let, we're going to make it better today. And, you know, we've got, as a customer, I often think to myself, my Lord, I would be absolutely stuffed if Farm Drop was made unavailable to me, because how on earth am I going to get this amazing organic whole milk delivered from Ivy House, or how on earth am I going to get this incredible sole discretion fish or any of the other amazing products that arrive each week, because generally speaking, I just can't access them unless it's through Farm Drop. But with that, I know that we've got a really long to-do list of stuff that's going to make it, you know, a lot better.
Yeah. So how does it work in practice? Can you maybe talk us through the process right from order to delivery?
Sure. So what are we on now? It's 11 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday. So I'm going to go on to my app and I'll see there that, because I'm logged in as myself, it's going to show me the stuff that I normally buy, and I'm going to start tapping away, and I'll then hit checkout and I'll pay, and that'll only take a minute or two. We've got lots of easy payment methods. And at that point, you know, all of the things that I've bought, you can actually see those if you're using the producer portal and you're at the other end of the system. And then what we do is every 24 hours or so we actually batch all the orders. So we have a cutoff. So the customer you order by midday today for a delivery that will take place tomorrow afternoon or the following morning. But if you go on this afternoon, then you've actually missed that cutoff. And the reason we do that is obviously that, you know, no food producer is going to thank us for ordering one chicken at a time. So we batch everything up, and that happens every 24 hours. So, right, this is effectively a harvest list, and our technology aggregates and then disaggregates everything that we sold into a producer specific harvest list. And then those producers, and you know, we're making a lot of progress on forecasting, so hopefully there are no real big surprises in there. And then those producers have got an amount of time to, you know, cut the spinach, or, you know, put the bottles of milk in the back of the van, or basically do the final things that they need to do in order to get their food up to our hub, which is in Enfield. And that all happens, you know, no later than quite early the following morning. And then we've got a team of people in there that, you know, because we've got a whole kind of snazzy new barcode system, they know where every product is destined for in terms of the actual kind of reusable green crate that's going to become the customer delivery crate. And so obviously that's in quality control. We make sure that we've got everything. And then those orders, when they're complete, they'll go back into the back of a renewable powered electric van,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll go whistling off into, you know, the customer's kitchen. So I would take delivery of that order from between 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. tomorrow. I can choose a slot, you know, so I could say I want it between 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Actually, 9 and 10 p.m. we've opened up some more delivery slots on the basis of demand.
Mm-hmm.
And say that's how it works. You don't. It's important to say that the lion's share of what we sell is the kind of, you know, fresh produce and protein that's,
yeah,
you know, arriving day in, day out. If you're making honey on the kind of, you know, on the South Downs, there is no freshness benefit to anybody,
mm-hmm,
of having that the day it's made. So we'll actually look after that.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
you know, a box of that will arrive, and then our system will understand what level of inventory we have as we're selling it, so we then trigger another order. And increasingly, what we are finding is that, you know, there are efficiency gains to share with producers, i.e.
mm-hmm,
we don't, if we can achieve amazing freshness and taste for our customers, but producers can actually deliver into us 4 times a week rather than 7 times a week, then let's do that, because, yeah, guess what, producers want to spend as little time on the road.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, so that's, you know, the constant drive is also to make life easier for them. I think we've got a good amount to do on that as well.
Fantastic. Are there any individual farmers who you've worked with that really stand out for you? Like producers who've really benefited from their involvement with FarmDrop?
Yeah, certainly. I think there's a few I can think of. I mean, the first time we ever sold a packet of sausages, it had been produced at Purton House Organics,
mm-hmm,
which is sort of in the sort of Swindon area, and there's a really amazing woman called Roe Mears whose farm that is, and she's absolutely the hands-on day-to-day boss of that. So she's somebody who I'm always inspired by when I go and see, because she's growing a brilliant operation, and you know, she's somebody who I think would say that it's been pretty transformative for her. There's an incredible group of fishers who sail mainly out of Plymouth, and they're sort of organised into a group called Soul of Discretion, who's run by an incredible lady called Caroline Bennett. She's somebody who I think would say that, you know, FarmDrop's been transformative to her business in terms of really pushing it into a much stronger financial position.
Brilliant.
And I could sort of mention various others, but no, we're really it's probably a thing that really does make all the hard work worthwhile.
Oh, sure.
when you see these really well-meaning, impassioned producers, and they're trying to farm in the right way, they're trying to look after their land, they're trying to look after their animals, they're trying to look after the seabed, and they're trying to do all the right things, and just to have been able to kind of evolve FarmDrop specifically in a way that's going to make much more of a commercial success of their operations is been amazing. And you know, we, as I say, there's no victory laps and no great high fives, and aren't they amazing? We're just starting out. We've
got, yeah,
all still to do, you know. But you know, I think we're on the right road.
Definitely sounds like it. What does this future hold for FarmDrop? Do you envisage it going countrywide?
So, eventually, at the right time. I mean, I think for our producers and even more so for our customers, the whole ethos, the drive is towards, you know, total simplicity, and it's, mm-hmm, really easy to understand everything. It's really easy to interact with everything. If you're between those two groups, i.e. your FarmDrop, actually, you're managing a huge amount of complexity on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I have no interest whatsoever in branching off into completely different geographies or formats or looking at different sorts of businesses. I just feel like we've got such a huge opportunity, and it's just about getting much better at what we're already doing and scaling in a way which is really true to the ethos and the ethics. And if we only do that, then everybody, including me, including the producers, including the team, including our customers, including our investors, will be really delighted. Because I guess the point I'm trying to make here, in a not very eloquent way, Will, is that it's food. It dwarfs every other industry by multiples, and so you just need to get it right in quite a small way, and you've actually created quite a meaningful business. And so that's what we're concentrating on. And if we do get it right, by the way, and we're doing the work on this at the moment, I genuinely believe that you will be able to see the effect that FarmDrop is having on UK carbon emissions targets in the not too distant future. You know, one of the things about being weighted towards lower environmental impact producers is that you're really reducing your carbon per kilogram of food delivered versus the conventional guys. Absolutely. And when you add all of those up, because it's food and people eat it every day, even if we only had a very small share of the overall market, I think you would be able to see the dent that little old FarmDrop is putting in the overall carbon system. And so that's something that's very exciting for us.
Absolutely. God, yeah. It's been great to hear you talk about this. I've had a broad smile throughout this interview. It's fantastic. So we're under a bit of time pressure, so I'm going to end this in the traditional way with the five quick questions, if you're ready.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, what's your all-time favourite song?
All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, that's a great choice. When you said that, I wondered if you were going to say Bob Dylan or Jimi Hendrix. But yeah, great, great choice. Brilliant song. Okay, what's the best book you've ever read?
Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
God, I haven't read that. I'll look that up. Good one.
Bit heavy, but it's amazing.
I'll have a look at that. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Keep going.
Simple as that, says it all. Okay, what's your perfect Sunday?
A perfect Sunday is a Romney Marsh slow roast leg of lamb, which would have come to me probably by Andy Clark at Park Farm, and that would be in the oven from probably about 9 o'clock in the morning, and we'd enjoy it probably not sooner than 2 p.m, and it would dovetail beautifully with a bit of sport to watch on the box afterwards, either rugby or football.
Brilliant. That sounds like a good day to make. And lastly then, I don't know if you do social media or not, but if you had to recommend a farmer, maybe one of your suppliers or someone involved in agriculture to follow on social media, who would it be and why?
So I think about this more in terms of people whose opinions I kind of make a point of kind of keeping in touch with, and they will have social stuff going on. So certainly Patrick Holden at Sustainable Food Trust. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the great thinkers. I think his successor, Helen Browning at Soil Association, I think is awesome. I pay very close attention to anything that she says. Yeah, I would say those two. Actually, Guy Watson at Riverford. I listen to him very closely, and you know, I think he's right on all of it.
Yeah, I heard another podcast he did recently, and he talked a huge amount of sense. It's been fantastic, Ben. So interested to hear what you're doing there, and I wish you every success going forward.
All right. Well, look, thanks very much indeed. Appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast, and hope to see you soon.
Yeah, take care, Ben, and to everyone at home, thanks for listening, and I hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans, this has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you, and good night.